Hello and welcome to Responsible Management. This is the podcast from the School of Management at the University of Bradford. My name is David Spicer and I'm the School's Director of Business and Community Engagement and delighted to be able to welcome you to our podcast. And we've got two great contributors for the podcast today. Thank you both very much for doing this. First is Nicola Kemp. Nikki is Editorial Director for Creative Brief. They're a marketing intelligence platform and next generation agency search consultancy, where Nikki oversees consumer trends, innovation, and interviews with industry thought leaders from across the creative industries for all areas of business. She started her career as a financial journalist before specialising in technology, social trends, and marketing, and her work has appeared across many well-known titles. She's a passionate advocate for diversity in all its forms, and she won the Women in Marketing Journalist of the Year Award for her work championing diversity in the creative industries, and was featured in TimeWise's Power 50 for her work on flexible working. She now also serves as a judge for the Women in Marketing Awards. Our second contributor is Eva Kipnis. Eva is Professor of Marketing at the University of Bradford, and her research expertise includes culturally informed consumer behaviour, cultural meanings conveyed by brands, diversity inclusion in engaged marketing and multicultural marketplaces, transformative consumer research, and the development and deployment of socially inclusive technologies in product and service innovations. Her work features regularly in leading journals, and Eva also serves on the Advisory Committee of Women in Marketing and the Advisory Committee for Transformative Consumer Research. Welcome, Nikki. Welcome, Eva. Thank you very much for joining us today. So you know our focus is on responsible management, but in terms of our particular conversation today, we're going to talk about representation and diversity in the context of marketing. But if perhaps we could start with that broad theme that we have for the podcast around responsible management. And what does responsible management mean for you? Nikki, if I can come to you first.
I think it's a really interesting one in the current climate as well. I'm a geriatric millennial, so I did not grow up in a workplace in which we were talking about mental health and bringing our whole self to work, or representation, if I'm honest. So I think it's really interesting asking what responsible management is, but first recognizing that actually responsible management is a work in progress. I think what constitutes responsible management for Generation Z is very different from somebody like me who came into the workforce 30 years ago. And I think what we've seen is a real shift towards recognizing what it really means in a working environment in which people expect to bring their whole self to work. Yes, you have to have the basics. You have to have your ESG credentials there, but you also need to be mindful of the brands that you work with, mindful of your employees and their mental health. And I think it's a really interesting time for responsible management because that has become a much, much bigger responsibility and a much more elastic concept than it was, say, 20 or 30 years ago.
Mindfulness is actually a very great way of thinking about the evolution of responsible management. And I think also what is important to recognize is that the whole notion of corporate social responsibility, which relates to responsible management, is evolving from a rather passive notion of doing no harm to a very active notion of driving positive transformation in society and making sure that while working in a market, while being a market actor, organizations also see themselves as social citizens, so to speak. So I think it's an interesting way of looking at responsible management as a process, as Nikki was saying.
So it's not just the ethics and the CSR and the challenge of meeting basic requirements, about a much more fundamental issue around identity and how an organisation chooses to see itself and represent itself, if that's not a way of me shoehorning in representation, which is our kind of focus on representation and kind of diversity. So perhaps for the uninitiated, there may be some out there, how would you characterise those and link them, I guess we've started talking about this already, to the notion of responsible management?
I think it's really interesting. I think diversity and representation is really about two things. It's how you represent your company externally, particularly through the lens of advertising. We're thinking about adverts. So who is in your advert? What are they doing? Are you representing them in an honest way? are you representing them at all? We know from data that there's huge swathes of the population that are still completely invisible in our advertising. People with disabilities, people with neurodiverse issues, people of colour. There are lots of people that are very, very underrepresented in our advertising and marketing, which is both bad for society and bad for business. Because if you're not representing people, essentially the message you're giving them is you don't value them. And there's a red thread between that lack of representation in commercial marketing with the lack of representation in the organisations that we work within. We know that there's not enough diverse leaders. We know we have a huge issue with that. We know at the moment, coming out of COVID, we've got a huge issue with retaining female talent. I think a lot of the return to work policies that companies have put into place have really cut a sway through their female workforce. So you've got these two things that are really working together to really hold businesses back, because great representation in your organization and in your marketing is such a growth driver, an innovation driver.
For too long, marketing was about very demographic, basic identity markers, which truly are meaningless in the contemporary world. If you look at somebody like Beyoncé, for example, she describes herself in so many cultural identity links. And she is not alone in this. Actually, somebody like her is more the norm now. We cannot just apply one label. We need to think about the entire person when we create these segments. So it is very relevant. And thinking about representation, it's also about seeing your audiences and helping marketeers and managers see who your audiences are and understand who they are. From representation come other aspects that marketing can address, such as development of products, etc.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Beyoncé is an interesting one. It links quite nicely to my next question, where, you know, thinking about getting representation right and what is effective representation, and thinking particularly about advertising. I think, I don't know if it's my phone listening to me, but since we've been talking about this podcast, I seem to have had a big feed of examples of 1950s adverts and how they're not particularly appropriate today appearing in my social media, which is quite interesting. But what I was wondering was, yeah, are there examples of good or bad practice that you could highlight in this regard? So firms or campaigns that have got this right or are examples to us all?
I would say Lego at the moment are my heroes. Yeah. Lego are getting so many things right. And what I particularly love about what Lego do is that they listen to their audiences, reflect on this, and then redevelop their marketing collateral. From this new Lego set, where they've incorporated female marketing scientists in the lab because a girl wrote to them and said, look, there aren't any in your set, to the most contemporary one where they have figures with disabilities. It's just something that is so holistically addressing and representing the diversity of their audiences that I don't think any other innovator currently exceeds them as a best practice example. And another one I would highlight, but maybe Nikki could talk about them, because I believe you wrote about them, Nikki, while in your days in campaign. Mars and Maltesers particularly, but they've also expanded into Mars overall. They are doing some great things.
I love the work that they've done, and I'm so pleased that you called out Maltesers as well, because I think that's such an example of a media owner driving great representation. Channel 4 has had this Diversity in Advertising Award for some time, where essentially they give brands £1 million of media spend to smash a stereotype. And when I was thinking of my favourite adverts in this space, so many of them are ads that were given that extra leg up, that push to be brave by Channel 4, like Maltesers, which really brought humour and disability on screen, or Vanish more recently with Havas. They brought neurodiversity to our screens for the very first time with such authentic, careful representation. when Eva was talking about Beyonce, it was making me think, when we do customer segmentations in marketing, and so often you see a creative brief and the audience is defined as a stereotype, and that stereotype is then perpetuated within the work. And it's why, according to the Gina Davis Institute, 48% of women depicted in advertising, they're still depicted in the kitchen. Now, I don't cook, and that experience just isn't there. And I think it's such an interesting challenge. And it's also interesting with Eva mentioning Lego, that's an in-house creative team. You know, they are doing things differently. They're building their brand in a really different way, and it's having hugely positive commercial outcomes as well.
Brilliant. Thank you both. I'm going to go back to Lego because I think I'm on safe ground with Lego. Their advertising obviously works because I'm rapidly bankrupting myself with Lego, but that's probably my issue more than anything else. Nikki, you mentioned the Channel 4 Awards, and I wondered about the wider stakeholders in this. Channel 4 are obviously very proactive in supporting and encouraging firms to think in these kind of ways. And it's a societal as an issue as much as it's a responsibility of a single firm. But I wondered, you know, who are the other stakeholders and what roles do they play?
Definitely. And I think that's such an interesting question, because really going right back to your first question, when we're talking about responsible business and responsible marketing, that is a collective effort, particularly when it comes to making gains, when it comes to diversity and inclusion and stereotypes. And it's interesting with the Channel 4 example, because obviously you've got the media owner, you've got Channel 4, you've got the media agencies, they're the people that buy the advertising space with Channel 4, you've got them, you've got the production companies, so the people absolutely shooting the film. And then also, crucially, you have the DE&I expertise, and that's the bit that's often missing. But actually, when you look at these campaigns, a lot of the time they had another company, they had a specialist that was really giving them some fabulous advice and insight into their target audience, which meant they weren't stereotyping. So they were working with those consultants the whole time. And then you have the creative agency, and they were obviously coming up with the creative ideas, but working really hand in hand with all of them. So you've got those five stakeholders, but then perhaps the top stakeholder, you have the brand, because interestingly, there were brands that have won the Channel 4 Diversity in Advertising Award that then chose not to run the campaign. So you still have to have that bravery within your marketing team to do something differently. And also what we're seeing more of now is to do it even if you don't win. So that's really interesting. So you don't have the airtime, but you're still going to do it. The other brilliant example of that collaborative approach of having lots of different companies involved is the Unstereotype Alliance, which the UN brings together loads of incredible brands like Unilever, and they work on eradicating stereotypes and sharing best practice together. So I think the future of responsible marketing is really rooted in more of that collaboration, which isn't always easy because it's a really competitive industry.
And as a professor in marketing, I would just also add that marketing academics are also another stakeholder in this process. And it's interesting when Nikki was talking about silos within industry, because it very much resonated also with a piece of research I have done with my colleagues in Multicultural Marketplaces Network, where we looked at the reasons why the effort to promote diversity and inclusion are sometimes not getting traction, or sometimes are slow, and sometimes end up in unfortunate mishaps. And the silos between the industry, the research, and also the education, because we need to develop workforce such that agencies do not need specialized consultants. We educators are responsible for developing the workforce. And then we as marketing researchers are responsible for developing the new tools that can be used in practice and education. Our network is launching Diversity and Inclusion Engaged Marketing Initiative Forum. First time we're doing it in the USA, in memory of our wonderful colleague and supporter, Professor Jerome Williams. And we have two panels talking to each other, industry and academic panel, who will be exchanging best practices and also knowledge on how to advance DEI in marketing.
Brilliant, that's great. I think from my perspective, I'm a HR prof, so that's my area for Nikki's benefit. And I come across a lot of this when we talk about recruitment selection and getting firms to think about the way in which they represent themselves to potential employees, and talking particularly to our final year students. A big challenge to them is they're so often so focused on getting a job, they don't recognise that that's a dialogue. And the firm is, as much as you are telling yourself to the firm should be selling themselves to you, and you should be looking at, is this a workplace? Is this an environment where I would be comfortable, be developed, be supported? I can find people like me. And I can think of brands like Heineken's, one that springs to mind, that has done a really good job of that kind of employer branding piece in the kind of the past as well. But they're very much holding, the students are very much holding us for account on those kind of things as well, in terms of their expectations. I wanted to come to a specific stakeholder, which I know you're both involved with, which is Women in Marketing. And I know that these are issues that are at the core of that organisation. So actually, you could tell us a little bit about Women in Marketing, what it represents, and how does it work in this space and support these issues?
Women Marketing is a social enterprise, and it has been in existence for a long time. I believe it was launched in 2004. As this big enterprise, Women in Marketing has a number of strands to it, but its essence is to serve a global community of practitioners in marketing and associated professions, such as creatives, for example, and also to amplify the good, effective and empathetic practices, mainly through the female lens. The strands of women in marketing operations include partnerships and collaborations, the bespoke event awards, and also a number of social platforms.
So I'm very lucky to have won a Women in Marketing award, but also to have connected with all the incredible women in the Women in Marketing community, like Eva. Also at Creative Brief, we are the media partner of the Women in Marketing Awards. So that really means that we lean into amplifying the voices from that community. To that end, this year we launched a new platform where we are championing incredible books about marketing, which just also happen to be written by women, because in 2020, of the top 200 best-selling businesses books, only 17 were written by women. Being in trends, I spend a lot of my life at marketing conferences. And whilst Mark Ritson and Rory Sutherland are really, really interesting, they're still headlining pretty much every conference. So Women in Marketing is a really great network that really just brings fresh thinking and new voices. And to Eva's point earlier around the kind of role of the academic stakeholder, it brings together lots of women from lots of different sectors and spaces so we can really learn from each other. And I think the point that Women in Marketing is a social enterprise is really interesting and important as well, because let's be honest, the marketing industry, I think the only other sector that has more awards than the marketing industry is the hairdresser industry. So there's a lot of awards in marketing, which is brilliant, because I think learning from best practice is really, really important. But I think the Women in Marketing Awards are very unique, being a social enterprise, which means they really are, to your points around ethical and responsible businesses, you know, Women in Marketing is really walking the walk there.
And I guess that plays into the roles that you both take in driving this agenda, and the support that from an organisational perspective, even since you've joined us, in terms of driving this agenda from a university kind of perspective as well.
So part of what I working with Women in Marketing in my advisory council member role is building the involvement of women in marketing with the higher education and further education sectors, because again, that can support the emergence and mentoring of new talent, which is very important because this is the next generation.
Our focus for the Knowledge Transfer Network is particularly around supporting SMEs. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to come back to SMEs and the specific challenges or opportunities from an SME perspective. Is representation, is diversity more or less of an issue from your experience in that context? Are there particular challenges facing SMEs?
So the need to be representative and inclusive is, if you like, the blanket expectation now. And to the point you were making about recruitment and HR perspective, I just wanted to share that there is research that indicates that 56% of UK youth will not consider an employee if they don't have a track record on diversity, equity and inclusion. So it is a pressing issue for SMEs. However, there is a very, very big challenge. SMEs struggle with lack of knowledge. When you're an SME, you cannot hire a big consultant in D&I. You really sometimes are doing so many things as one person. And our research indicated that SMEs struggle with accessible knowledge on doing marketing well from DEI perspective.
To Eva's point, I think it's really clear that SMEs are under a lot of financial pressure at the moment. And to your point around employee engagement and recruitment, we know that's harder. We know in the creative industries at the moment, there is a huge, huge issue with churn, with people leaving at very, very fast rate, and the cost of replacing them being very, very high. I think there are definitely structural challenges with SMEs. They don't have the employee resource groups of big multinationals. They don't have those matrix structures. They don't necessarily have those budgets. But the benefit of that is that they can move quite quickly. If you believe that you measure what you treasure, which I definitely do, you know, I've seen a lot of very small companies move really quickly on their internal D&I targets because they're smaller. They're not held back by waiting for sign-off by big corporate initiatives. And in fact, some of the most innovative policies around D&I have come from really, really small companies.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. Just to come back to something you mentioned, Nikki, you mentioned the financial challenges of the current climate, you know, and obviously the current economic situation influences business kind of quite dramatically. Do we think that's a kind of a positive or a drag on efforts around diversity and representation?
So I think it is a double-edged sword. There are definitely brands that are putting the brakes on investing in diversity, equity and inclusion. And particularly when it comes to staff training, I think that's often the first thing that is put on pause in any kind of downturn, which actually education can unlock so much growth. So that's not necessarily a good thing. But I think increasingly companies are recognizing that it's not an either or scenario.
I think it is a double-edged sword. But also at the same time, I think that there is, at long last, evidence to support the case for DEI not just being something that requires investment, but also something that can generate returns. And wonderful reports where they are evidencing that actually DEI is what will make sure that your brand remains connected with your consumers. If we think about it, just in the UK, 4.3 million consumers with disabilities click away from inaccessible websites when they shop online. This is the spending power of £11.75 billion. I think organizations are waking up to this aspect of DEI, that this is not just the right thing to do it's also a good thing to do for the company as well.
Brilliant. So what's the practical advice then for those businesses, those leaders who are recognising that opportunity and starting to look at these things? What should they be doing? Where can they start?
I think the first thing is to measure what you treasure. And I mean measure both things. You need to measure the diversity of your organisation and you need to measure the diversity of your output. Even the very smallest company will be doing a fair amount of communication. You know, really, really think about who you're communicating to and how you're depicting them. I think the second thing is the internal education. I think that is so important. There are lots of accessible courses, whether it's looking at unconscious bias or it's having those conversations where you're looking at how you segment your consumers, it's having those conversations as well. And I think the third thing is just starting. I think we do have a tendency in the UK to strategize everything to death and do minimal execution. This is particularly true in D&I. So particularly for SMEs, my really practical advice would be start small, but start rather than talking yourself in circles around what your D&I strategy is. I think starting is always the key, and just making sure that whatever you're doing, you are measuring it and it has proper KPIs. It's not just a panel discussion on International Women's Day and business as usual the other 364 days of the year. It's really keeping yourself accountable to what your DEI strategy is and what your goals are.
And I would add to this is when it particularly comes about your consumer audiences, take a pause and think a minute about who are your target and non-target audiences. Who is it that you don't target and why is it? And what is the impact on the non-target audiences? And consider whether you can redefine your audience in a more inclusive manner. I very much also agree with what Nikki says. I mean, DEI is quite scary because there are so many diversity facets that sometimes companies just think, oh, I don't know where to begin, so I'll do nothing. But just start somewhere.
Brilliant. Thank you both. Our final question is a slight change of tack, and we've been asking this from all of our contributors over the series. So who's your management hero? That can be somebody personal, somebody professional, the person who's inspired or influenced you the most in your career.
I'm actually going to go for Ade Onalud, who is the founder of Women in Marketing. She's just someone who really embodies something that I really believe, which is leadership is what happens when no one's watching. It's those moments of kindness and encouragement that I'm sure she gives to so many people in the industry. But I think kindness is probably the most underrated tool in business, if I'm honest. And it's sometimes seen as being a bit of a soft skill, not something that's particularly innovative. But I think Ade really brings to life the sort of everyday courage of kindness, and that kindness is a radical act.
Well, I struggled with this question because naming one person is really, really, really difficult. One person who I wanted to mention, the late Professor Susan Douglas, on whose shoulders many of us women in marketing academia standing and owe her recognition. So the progress that we are able to make, I think we owe to people like Susan. And if I may, another hero of mine is, as I say, my colleague who also is no longer with us, Jerome Williams. He is a US-based professor who had done a very similar kind of thing that Ade is doing in a very gentle way, supporting so many academics who are working in the area of diversity and inclusion.
Brilliant. Thank you both very, very much indeed. It's been really interesting, stimulating discussion. If people want to contact you, how can they find you, Nikki?
So I am on, I was going to say Twitter, but it's now X, isn't it? I'm at Nikki Casey. And on LinkedIn, I am Nikki Kemp, or my profile is / Nikki Casey as well. And I'm also on nicola.k@creativebrief.com.
Brilliant. Thank you. Eva?
So I am on the web pages of the University of Bradford, of course. I'm also on LinkedIn as Dr. Eva Kipnis. I am on X as @Eva_Kipnis. And my professional email address is listed in the University of Bradford repository or directory.
Great. Thank you both. Yeah, so hopefully you found that interesting and stimulating. If you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, it's David P. Spicer. On the app formerly known as Twitter, I'm not quite used to willing to say X yet, it's at Dave P. Spicer. If you want to follow the School of Management, it's at Brad Management. If you want to reach out to us at the Business and Community Engagement team, again, you'll find us on the university website, but we've got a general email for Business and Community Engagement. That's BACE, base at bradford.ac.uk. Hopefully you found this interesting, worthwhile, enjoyed the conversation. If you have, we'd love you to like, to rate us, give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast. And we'll be back with more podcasts very, very soon. Thank you. If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourselves. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base at bradford.ac.uk.